We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, Lakers Nation. Welcome into the LakersNation.com podcast, kind of a bonus Sunday edition of the show because it's game day. Lakers, Pacers tonight. I want to call it a big game, but let's face it, right now, every game is a big game for the Lakers as they try to do two things, try to stay ahead of the Golden State Warriors in the playoff push and not fall to the 10 seed. And they also try to catch up to somebody, whether it be the Kings or more likely, in my opinion, the Phoenix Suns and jump up to the 8 seed. It looks like right now that may be a bit of a long shot. We need both those teams to start losing some games, but bottom line, every game right now for the Lakers, it's a big game. It's an important game. And that includes tonight's matchup with the Pacers, which I think should be a fun one in terms of we talk about styles make fights and all that sort of stuff. This has the potential to be a really fun, really exciting game. But I want to get into exactly what the Lakers need to do in order to win it. I also need to talk a little bit about Spencer Dinwiddie. We'll get into the mailbag. A lot of stuff to talk about on today's show. Don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/LakersNation. In fact, if you're there right now, you're on the channel watching this video, hit that subscribe button for me and then also hit that thumbs up, that like button. All right, let's talk about this. Lakers, Pacers tonight. So the Pacers already did the Lakers a favor a couple of nights ago when they beat the Golden State Warriors. Thank you, Pawnee. Very well done. The Lakers now have a little bit of separation between themselves and the Warriors. Not a lot. It's still a pretty tight race, though, and so the Lakers need to keep stacking up these wins. In fact, there's an opportunity here to create a little bit more breathing room tonight as the Warriors will be in action. They're going to be taking on the Minnesota Timberwolves. So if the Lakers can get a win, the Warriors lose again, well, that would certainly be helpful for the Lakers and their efforts to stay at the very least in that 9 seed. Remember, that's home court in that 9-10 matchup is what's at stake. The Houston Rockets last night won their 8th game in a row. Suddenly, they are a threat. They are right there, game and a half behind the Warriors. Fortunately, the Lakers do have a 3-game cushion between themselves and the Rockets. I wouldn't be all that sad, honestly, if the Rockets did catch the Warriors and knock them out. The NBA, on the other hand, would be extremely sad. Adam Silver, somebody would have to check on his well-being if the Golden State Warriors were not to make it into any, but not even into the play-in, because that would be a ratings disaster. But the Lakers right now with a game and a half edge on the Golden State Warriors, you'd like to see that increase even further. Now, Phoenix, unfortunately, has won their last 3 in a row. I single out the Phoenix Suns as the best option for the Lakers to catch up because the Lakers do have the tiebreaker over the Suns, whereas the Mavericks, the Sacramento Kings, who are closer in the standings to the Lakers don't have tiebreakers over either of those teams, and the Suns have a more difficult schedule from here on out. However, if you saw what's happened recently with those Ghouls in Green last night, they rested a bunch of their guys, had a bunch of their guys show up on the injury report. So even though the Suns have a difficult schedule down the stretch, I don't know how real that's going to be because unless a lot of these races stay tight all the way through, teams are going to start resting their guys. I mean, look at the cautionary tale, what just happened to Brandon Ingram the other night, our old friend, hyperextended his knee. He's got a bone bruise now. He's getting reevaluated in a few weeks. That could drastically change the Pelicans' playoff fortunes if this is something that lingers into the postseason. And hopefully it's not. You never want to see a guy injured, but teams are going to start playing it careful with their main guys. And so even though the Suns have a difficult schedule the rest of the way, They do still have one more game against the Spurs here. And then after that, they get into a really difficult portion of their schedule. I do wonder how many of these teams are going to start taking their foot off the gas, which to me, I think the most likely outcome right now is the Lakers do wind up staying in the 9 seed. But nonetheless, you get the win tonight over the Pacers. At the very least, hey, it doesn't hurt you. Maybe it improves your chances of moving up. And at the very least, it should help at least keep a little bit of a cushion between yourself and the Golden State Warriors. So again, this is an important game for the Lakers. So what do they need to do in order to win this thing? Well, first and foremost, it's pace. It's pace, and appropriately enough, because the Pacers, they are true to their name. They are the second fastest paced team in the NBA on the season. This team flies up and down the court, and the Lakers are no slouch themselves in the pace category. They're actually fifth in the NBA in pace. I know it's not something we talk about a lot, but the Lakers actually play at a fairly quick pace, and so they are fifth in the NBA in pace right now on the season. So this is where, when we talk about styles make fights, this could make this a very entertaining, very high-scoring basketball game. Now, if your interest is in having fun, yes, an entertaining, high-scoring, up-and-down track meet will provide that. If your interest is the Lakers winning the game, even if it has to come in an ugly fashion, which we talked about last game, the Lakers beat the 76ers, ugly game, not a fun watch. But if the most important thing is not entertainment, if the most important thing is a Lakers win, well, then the Lakers are going to have to do what they can to slow down the Pacers. Don't let them get out and run and get these fast break opportunities. The Lakers transition defense has not been great this season, even with their efforts to get back and not worry about crashing the offensive glass. In fact, I do wonder if the Lakers in this game, the best option may be to send extra help at the offensive glass and don't give the Pacers an opportunity to get out and run to begin with, because you're crushing them on the boards. I think the potential is there for the Lakers to do that tonight, but you've got to control the pace this game is played at. Again, the Lakers and the Pacers can fly up and down the court, but from the Lakers side of things, I think controlling the basketball is going to be more important. That gets to a big, big topic here. The Lakers turnovers, 21 turnovers against the 76ers. They're going to lose this game against the Pacers if they turn the ball over like that. It just plain and simple, they'll lose this game. The Pacers are, despite the fact that they fly up and down the court, they're actually pretty good at hanging on to the basketball and not turning it over as much as you would think a team that plays at a breakneck pace like they do would. They're pretty solid there. They're, well, middle of the pack at least. So they're 12th in the NBA in turnovers per game, which again, given their pace, is pretty solid. The fact that they're flying up and down the floor the way that they do. In fact, if we tweak the numbers a little bit here and we go, rather than just based on totals, we look at per 100 possessions. There it is. Yeah, the Indiana Pacers, they're actually the seventh best team in the league when it comes to turnovers. So they do a pretty good job taking care of the basketball. Tyrese Halliburton is fantastic, but they're also really good when it comes to steals. They're really good at forcing live ball turnovers. So for a Lakers team that just gave up 21 turnovers in their last game, you're playing against a Pacers team that generates about 8 steals per game. Those are all live ball transition scoring opportunities. So the Pacers do a nice job hanging onto the ball on their side, and then they do a pretty good job forcing turnovers. Pretty similar in that way to the Philadelphia 76ers, who also don't turn the ball over very often and are pretty good forcing turnovers. And we saw what happened. The Sixers, they shot horribly, and yet the Lakers still didn't create much separation. In fact, they were losing this game for a decent chunk of it until the very end because of the turnovers. The 76ers were getting so many extra scoring opportunities because of the Lakers' turnovers. Again, if the Lakers turn the ball over like this against the Pacers, that's ball game. You're not going to count on Indiana to shoot 20-some-odd percent from three. It's not going to happen. So the turnovers are critical. Again, if you fall into the trap of turning the ball over 20 times, game over. You're not winning this one. So the Lakers have to fix that tonight against the Pacers. The other big key, though, and I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this matchup, it's defense. The defense has got to be on point. I thought the defense did look better against the 76ers, which makes it maybe so regrettable that the offense didn't get things going against the 76ers, because had it gotten going, the conversation would be all about how great the Lakers were defensively and what a difference it made and did this team take a step forward. But the Lakers just missed and missed and missed and then struggled with turnovers. So the improvements on the defensive end wound up getting kind of eclipsed by how poor they were offensively. If they can defend the way they did against the 76ers tonight against the Pacers, that will bode well for them. In fact, that's how the Lakers beat the Pacers in the in-season tournament. It was by defending them and just taking them out of the game with their size, with their physicality. That's going to happen again here. Remember, the Lakers do see this Pacers team again in about a week in Indiana. So you want to set the tone in this one, get the win, take care of business on your home court. This is a pretty good Indiana side that beating them twice in a span of a week may not be easy. So you want to make sure that you take care of your home court advantage and beat them in LA. And again, I think a lot of it is going to come down to the Lakers defense. Welcome back, Cam Reddish. He's going to have to spend some minutes on Tyrese Halliburton and Spencer Dinwiddie, who I thought played really well defensively against the Sixers. He is going to be really critical for this one as well. Speaking of Spencer Dinwiddie, we need to talk a little bit about him. So Spencer Dinwiddie, defensive stopper. I did a video for the YouTube channel yesterday, again, youtube.com/LakersNation, where I was talking about the net rating for the Lakers, what the advanced stats tell us about Spencer Dinwiddie and pairing him with D'Angelo Russell, pairing him with Austin Reeves, rather than pairing Reeves and D'Lo together. The eye test has showed us that having a plus defender next to Reeves or D'Lo in lieu of the other player is a good thing. It's something that helps the Lakers out in the long run. And the numbers do bear that out. The eye test shows us that. The stats bear that out too. In fact, Dinwiddie and D'Lo together are a net rating of plus 20 and change per 100 possessions, according to Cleaning the Glass. So Spencer Dinwiddie, what he brings on the defensive side of the ball right now, which to some degree was something that we didn't anticipate, but what he's bringing there is really helping out this Lakers team. And again, it speaks to big picture. Are the Lakers better off rather than running D'Lo and Austin together so much? They better off splitting them and having a three and D, whether it's Spencer Dinwiddie or not into the future, a three and D style guard next to them. It seems like it does improve the performance of Austin and improve the performance of D'Angelo Russell. And it makes your defense certainly more passable, particularly without Jared Vanderbilt available right now for the Lakers. But all that being said, Spencer Dinwiddie was not known as an excellent defensive player. Coming in, he was seen as this high usage player. In fact, this is what he talked about a little bit after the game. He was seen as a high usage guy, a scorer, somebody who could light it up, somebody who could create their own shot. And I think it's remarkable that on this team, he's become this perimeter, I don't want to say stopper, but solid defensive player. I mean, we, of course, remember that block on Damian Lillard, but he's been contesting really well in the perimeter. He's been sticking with guys. He's been doing a nice job on the defensive side of the ball. So what is going on? How is it that Spencer Dinwiddie, who has had this long NBA career, suddenly shows up in LA and becomes just what the team needs? I think there's two things here. Sometimes when we talk about a difficult situation, one of my favorite sayings, whether it's in sports or in life, it's adapt and overcome. Spencer Dinwiddie is in a difficult situation. There's no question about that. No question at all. His contract got bought out. He got waived from the Toronto Raptors, and he's going to be a free agent this summer. He's got to show that he's adaptable, that he can fit in anywhere if he's going to get, whether it's with the Lakers or someone else, if he's going to get a contract this coming summer. And so Spencer Dinwiddie, his adaptation to this new environment is the defensive side of the ball. He's doing a tremendous job recognizing that the Lakers have D'Lo. The Lakers have Austin. What they don't have is somebody who can defend, because that's not what D'Lo does. That's not what Austin does. So Spencer has really been focused in on that side of the floor, recognizing that this is what the team needs. This is what's going to get me minutes. This is what's going to get me on the court, which is what's going to get me paid this summer. So I think that his attention to detail on the defensive side of the ball is one of necessity. This is what the team needs from him right now, so that's what he's committing to. And that's caused his offensive game to take a little bit of a back seat. Now, I do think there is another factor at play here, and that is simply contrast, right? Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell, neither player is a good defensive player on the perimeter. So when you see Spencer Dinwiddie slide with a guy, give a good contest, it stands out, right? Compared to what we're seeing from the other guards on the defensive side of the ball. So, and that's not to say that Austin doesn't compete or D'Lo doesn't compete. They have their moments, certainly, but they're not playing defense at the same level as Spencer Dinwiddie. And part of it is Dinwiddie is able to just focus on that because D'Lo and Austin are doing their thing on the offensive side of the ball. That's a factor here as well. But I do think part of it is also the contrast between the Lakers' other guards and Dinwiddie, who's playing solid defense. He's not Alex Caruso. He's not KCP, our former Lakers, but he's doing well there. And I think part of it is the contrast that's really making it stand out. And his defensive performance is popping off the screen in part because of that. But the question then becomes, is there a point, though, where Dinwiddie is able to incorporate all of it? I'm talking about the offensive game and the defensive game. He did shoot 50% from three against the 76ers. He is now up to 35% and change from deep as a Laker. For a little while there, his percentages were, abysmal, and everybody was rolling their eyes and saying, oh boy, Lakers curse, here we go again. But now he's shooting a respectable percentage from three, and he just had 11 points. Look, it's not like he blew up, but 11 points, it's the most he scored as a Laker. And he was asked about it after the game, saying, hey, what do you need in order to get into a rhythm on the offensive end? And here's what he said. He said, he swears, and then he says, I need the ball. In my entire career, I've always been a high usage guy, right? So if you give me the ball, and a lot of the NBA runs similar plays, I think the nuance tends to be the spacing and where specific guys like the ball. So if you've watched the game, Spencer Dinwiddie, again, we're talking about adapting to this new team that he's on, has not been given the ball in situations that would be typical for him over the course of his career. I'm talking about getting the ball, high pick and roll, let him operate, read the floor, go from there, break down his man one-on-one, create a shot for himself. These are the things that Spencer Dinwiddie has done over the course of his long career. He's comfortable with. Instead, we're seeing him a lot spotting up in the corner, acting as a secondary creator, sometimes a third creator, depending on what the lineup looks like. And so this is not something that he's necessarily used to. You think about with the Dallas Mavericks, he was the microwave scorer off the bench. He was more of a go-to lead ball handler with the Nets. Now he's being put into a different role. And so part of it is him making the adjustment, but part of it also is, as he talks about, the nuance of understanding what the spacing is going to look like, specific teammates, where it is they want the ball, how he can set them up best. And that is something that's starting to click with him. So what I expect to see out of Spencer Dinwiddie, and fingers crossed, hopefully the defensive performance continues, but I think his offense is going to continue to grow. His role will continue to grow on the team as he's adjusting to his teammates, to where they want the ball, all of those sorts of things. And as his teammates are becoming more comfortable with him as well. Remember, the Lakers were in a spot where they can't lose games. They couldn't wait for Spencer Dinwiddie to become acclimated to the offensive system of the Lakers. And so that resulted in a lot of him off in the side. Hey, you're just going to be a floor spacer here. Now guys are getting more comfortable giving him the ball and saying, go do your thing. And we're going to put you into this situation. We're going to let you run pick and roll here. We're going to expect you to create for us here. Guys are starting to trust in his offensive game more. And you can see that start to pay dividends. So ideally, and I talked again yesterday about Dinwiddie and how he's actually the better fit next to D'Lo, or the better fit next to Austin than the other guy is, because of the defensive component that his game brings right now that has suddenly become more of a thing with the Lakers. But I do think we're going to see a more well-rounded version of Spencer Dinwiddie as time goes on. Ideally, Lakers have, 12 games left, I believe. Ideally, by the time we get to the end of these 12 games, you've got a Spencer Dinwiddie on the team that is both giving you the effort on the defensive side of the ball, giving you the performance there, because that's really what's going to keep those minutes coming to him, particularly if and when Gabe Vincent returns, fingers crossed. Hopefully Gabe gets back and he's healthy. But I think we're also going to see his offensive game round into form. In fact, I would predict that 11 points will not wind up being, by the end of these 12 games, Spencer Dinwiddie's high as a Laker. I think that we will see games where he really gets going on the offensive end. And that's going to be a lot of fun. I think that's going to be a big benefit if they can get that version of Dinwiddie heading into the playoffs. Again, I like what we've seen from him defensively. it's been a very big need for the Lakers, even with Cam Reddish returning now, which does help the Lakers on the defensive side of the ball as well. This team has struggled so badly defensively that if Dinwiddie can keep doing what he's been doing, and I love the effort we're seeing, the closeouts that he's making, the plays that the reads he's making defensively, it's fantastic. If he can keep doing that.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I think the offensive game, as he gets more minutes on the floor, it's just going to continue to grow. So for right now, a lot of credit to Spencer Dinwiddie for what he's doing defensively, and a lot of credit for him being the professional that he is, recognizing the way I get on the floor, it's with my defense. That's what this team needs me to be. So that's what I'm going to be. And those minutes will ultimately allow me to shine and allow my offensive game to eventually come through. I think that is what we're going to see from Dinwiddie. All right. I'm going to get into some of the mailbag here, which, you guys know, if you've watched this show before, you listen to the show before, the way the mailbag works, I may get a question that's on a specific topic, but I also use those questions to pinball into a lot of different topics that I want to discuss. So most of these are coming from the post game after Lakers 76ers. And let's get into it here. Jay Jan said, can this team make a run like last year? Oh, boy. See, this is where the standings are a problem. So right now, we look at the standings. You've got the Lakers sitting the 9 seed. And you look at their win percentage. It's not bad. It's not bad at all. It's just the damn Western Conference. It's so good. It's so deep. I mean, Memphis, right? Memphis was erased, essentially, this season. And you still have... The Houston Rockets are a 500 basketball team, and they're not even going to make the play-in. I mean, good Lord. That's the depth of the Western Conference right now. So the Lakers are winning right now at a 54% clip. I mean, let's take a look at this. Go back to last year. The Lakers' win percentage last year, 52%. They were winning at a 52% clip last year, 43 wins, and that got them the 7 seed. That got them the 7 seed last year. This year, the Western Conference, just being a little bit deeper, the Lakers are winning at a higher clip right now than they were last season. Now, you can say last season you had 65, 70% of the season was kind of mired under the Russell Westbrook team, and then they really took off after they made those trades. So it's a little bit weird in that the Lakers last season really were two completely separate teams. They were the pre-Westbrook trade team and then a completely different team post-Westbrook trade. So that was kind of unique, but nonetheless, a 52% winning percentage was the 7 seed with a game edge last season. And this season you've got a better winning percentage and you're sitting in the 9 seed right now. And that just, again, goes to show how much deeper the Western Conference is and just continues to get I mean, my goodness, look at next season. What's going to happen next season when Houston, I wouldn't be shocked if Houston makes a big move this offseason. I also wouldn't be shocked if San Antonio goes and gets a point guard, because good Lord, how many times have we seen Wemby out there needing the ball and not having anybody that can get him the ball? They're probably, I mean, they might even be the team that gets Trae Young. The Lakers will be fighting them for him, but they could wind up getting him. So the West is only going to get deeper. Memphis, of course, they get healthy. They're an easy playoff team. Easy. It's, the West is a clown car of playoff teams. Just everybody crammed in to this brutal conference. So can the Lakers make a run like last year? I think there's a lot of parity in the West. I don't, aside from, like, obviously the Kings have been crushing the Lakers, and that's unfortunate. And the Nuggets have been crushing the Lakers. That's unfortunate. Outside of those two teams, I don't look at any team and say the Lakers should be cowering in fear here. The Lakers simply can't win this series. Even if I look at one of the teams above them, I look at Oklahoma City. They're the one seed. Could the Lakers beat them? Hell yeah, they could beat them. The three seed, the Minnesota Timberwolves, could the Lakers beat them? Yes, they can. Would they be the favorite? No, because those teams have been better on the season. But it's not out of the question for the Lakers to beat these teams. The Clippers, sure. The Pelicans, sure. The Suns, absolutely. That's part of the benefit. But when you're sitting in the nine seed and you look at the breakdown here and you see the Lakers right now are three games behind the Mavericks and don't have the tiebreaker. They're three games behind the Sacramento Kings and don't have the tiebreaker. They're 3.5 games behind the Suns. They do have the tiebreaker, but Phoenix knows the deal. Phoenix knows exactly what's going on. They're focused on trying to stay in the sixth seed and stay out of the play-in. They're giving everything they've got right now. So you need the Suns to lose three more games than the Lakers do. Now, the Suns, again, have a brutal schedule, but how many of these teams shut things down the stretch? So that's my roundabout way of saying, can the Lakers make that run? It's going to be much more difficult to do it this season than last. And it's not necessarily a commentary on the quality of this team. Some of that is certainly injury related, but it's much more difficult to make that run out of the 9 or 10 seed than it is the 7 or 8. The 9 or 10, it's completely unforgiving. You have to win two games. You have one bad shooting night, your season is over. That's it. It's single elimination. You're done. And the teams you would have to beat right now, you'd be going up against the Warriors. So let's say you beat the Warriors. And this is a nightmare scenario for the NBA, by the way. The Lakers and Warriors play in a game where one of those teams has to go home. That's a nightmare. A complete nightmare for the league to know that immediately your two biggest draws, Lakers and Warriors, you could throw the Knicks in there in the Eastern Conference, but your two biggest draws, one of them is done, only playing one postseason game. That's not ideal from the league's perspective. And then let's say you get past the Warriors. Let's say you maintain a home court and you get past the Warriors. Then you get either Dallas or Sacramento on the road. Winner moves on, loser goes home. And in that case, based on what they've done so far against Sacramento this season, you're probably praying it's Dallas. But Mike, you're going up against Dallas with Luka, with Kyrie, with their ability to close in the clutch. So it's a tall order just to get into the postseason from the ninth seed. If you tell me they can get up to the eighth seed and you can have a slip up and still get through, you just have to win one game and you get two shots at it, it makes it much more likely and much more possible to even get in. So the nine seed, when we're asked the question of, can they make a run like last year? If they can survive the nine seed, yes, I think they can make a run. Especially if you tell me the Lakers are the eight seed and the Thunder are the one, let's go. I wouldn't say the Lakers would be the favorite in that series, but no reason why the Lakers couldn't move on. No reason why they couldn't make it to the second round there. So could they make a run? Sure. But I'd be very nervous about them surviving the play-in from the nine seed as compared to the seven or the eight seed. Patrick, I know Spencer had a rough start for us, but if this guy can play himself back in form, he can be a real asset. But will he? I think we're watching it. I think he is. He's getting himself on the floor with his defense. Mamba mentality. Just a note, the Lakers broke their losing streak against the Sixers. That's their second. Broke their Clippers losing streak as well. They've also... The way our brains operate, we will say, Lakers fans, we will say, but they've also gotten swept by the Kings and the Nuggets. Not ideal, but glasses half full, yes. They broke those losing streaks, and we'll take that. All right. Master Lock turnovers was that one. Buck said, this team is too cool for school. Who do they think they are? I think that's a response to the Lakers and their effort, their energy level against the Sixers. The offense was sometimes offense. We can get too wrapped up in whether or not a shot goes in, and we can equate good offense to the ball going in the basket, which is not always true. Just like good defense doesn't always mean you get the stop. But I will say the Lakers look bad with their turnovers against the 76ers. I don't know how much of that was effort, but it was certainly frustrating that coming off of 3 days off, 2 days of practice, which the Lakers, I mean, editor extraordinaire Daniel Starkan was on the show the other day, and he mentioned that he's at every practice. He mentioned that he believes the Lakers probably have only practiced 8, 9, 10 times, something like that, in total on the season. So you get 2 days of practice to really work on everything, and then you're that sloppy. That's not ideal. Now, I don't know if that was an effort thing. Hey, we can just cruise to a win here because the 76ers don't have Embiid. I don't know if that was the issue or what. But at least on the defensive side of the ball, I thought they competed, but they're going to need to be much better tonight against the Pacers. Hero, it's very noticeable how easily Maxey was scoring when Cam wasn't defending him. It's crazy how much better he and Vando make this team defensively. We'll take a grinded out win over a loss any day. Yeah, this team needs defensive players. I mean, they're literally one of the worst defensive teams in the NBA since the All-Star break. They've been atrocious. And part of that is all their defenders have been hurt with the exception of Anthony Davis. And Spencer Dinwiddie has stepped into that role to some degree. Cam Reddish coming back certainly helps you. But the guy you really need is Jared Vanderbilt. You need him back. He is the piece. We talk about why Dinwiddie and D'Lo works better than D'Lo and Reeves. Why Dinwiddie and Reeves works better than D'Lo and Reeves. Why those combinations work. It's because you don't have two negative defensive players out there. You have one positive in Dinwiddie, which has been a bit of a surprise, plus Reeves or plus D'Lo. However, if it's Vando out there at the three, let's say, and it's D'Lo and Austin, well, suddenly that is a little bit easier to run out there. Why? Because Jared Vanderbilt's defense is so good that he can sometimes make up for the deficiencies of both Austin and D'Lo and make that group actually work. I think he's the glue piece. With having that backcourt out there that allows those two guys to play on the floor at the same time. Are there some offensive concerns that come along with that? Yes, absolutely. But for a Lakers team that's been really poor defensively, Cam Reddish coming back, Vanderbilt coming back, that's certainly important. I'll tell you what, though, guys, this is my concern. This is my concern with this team and with everybody getting healthy. And it's fashionable right now to pile on Darvin Ham. Right? I wish it wasn't like this. I don't trust Darvin to mix and match appropriately. You look at this team, there's still a lot of times where you would get all offensive units, all defensive units out there on the floor. You look what happened after the in-season tournament. Darvin just said, to hell with guards. Reeves, D'Lo, both to the bench. And I'm going to start Cam Reddish and Torian Prince and Jared Vanderbilt. I'm going to bench two of my higher paid guys on the roster in D'Lo and Austin. I'm going to bench two of my higher skill guys on the roster. Probably what, my third and fourth best player somewhere in there. I mean, you can argue the numbers, but two of my best players on the roster, I'm going to bench them and I'm going to go all defense, no shooting, because who needs that? And we'll see what happens. Rather than mixing and matching, which is what this roster needs. Now, what you really need in today's NBA, it's five guys on the floor who can do both things, who can defend and score. Do both. The Lakers don't have that. They have a bunch of guys who can do one or the other. And in that situation, it's really important that you find the right blend of those two things. If you can't do that, you're going to wind up with too much of one thing or too much of the other. And either one of those things can be really, really bad, can be disastrous. So if I was better at cooking, there would be some kind of baking metaphor in there. But this is my concern, is that once the Lakers get these guys back, the lineup still won't be mixed and matched appropriately to have a balance of defense and offense on the floor. I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong. And I hope that Vando comes back healthy and Cam Reddish is back, and that gives you the right blend of defense that you can inject into these offensive lineups. You can toss Cam in. Yes, they're going to ignore him in the corner, but you've got enough offensive players on the floor to make up for it. Those guys who are weak defensively, Cam's going to help you make up for those things. AD is going to help you make up for that. Same thing with Jared Vanderbilt. But I've been pretty, there have been a lot of things we can be disappointed with this season and from the coaching side. But one of the things that maybe we haven't talked about enough has been the issues with mixing and matching the skill sets appropriately. And that's not even all on Darvin, because this team has been insanely injured over the course of the season. So many guys have just been in and out of the lineup, in and out of the rotation. It's been almost impossible to find any consistency there. So some of it is not even Darvin Ham's fault. Certain guys just have not been available. Like right now, most of his defensive players have not been available. So part of it's not on Darvin, but even when he has had a decent complement of players, I still see too much all offense, all defense lineups, and then you pay the price on the other end of the floor. All right. Mamadou said Dinwiddie was talking about, I believe, the Star in Your Role award there. Thomas, the Dank Engine, said Master Lock Solomon Hill forever, please. You know why. Oh, yes, we do. LeBron, things happen in sports, and I know people are still mad at Solomon Hill for what happened back in 2021. For anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, he fell into LeBron when going after a loose ball, dove into LeBron's ankle, sprained his ankle. LeBron missed a bunch of time. I believe LeBron has another MVP award on his trophy shelf. Had Solomon Hill not done that, I think LeBron was on pace to win the MVP that season. And we also got a very diminished LeBron James in the playoffs, which saw the Lakers go out in the first round. Now, I do think that most of the reason why the Lakers went out in the playoffs that year was Anthony Davis getting injured in that first round series with the Suns. In fact, I think had AD not gotten injured, they were clear. I mean, the Suns had no answer for Anthony Davis whatsoever. He was dominating them. Had Anthony Davis not gotten hurt, because the Suns went all the way to the finals, you could make the argument that the Lakers were taking back-to-back trips to the finals with 2021, them also going. I think that there is somewhere out there an alternate reality where AD did not get hurt, and somewhere in the multiverse, the Lakers either won back-to-back championships or made back-to-back finals runs. And can we only imagine what that would have meant for the Russell Westbrook trade? Because it probably doesn't happen if that team goes back-to-back to the finals. All of that because AD gets hurt in round one against the Suns. And perhaps some of that, too, is LeBron getting hurt with Solomon Hill. Oh, that's quite a what if. Malcolm Jones said, dude, the Lakers have 12 games left. How do we still have three back-to-backs? Got to keep stacking wins when we can. Man, I mean, whatever. I don't know if the Lakers need to send a gift basket, whatever they need to do to smooth things over the schedule makers, because it's like this. It's like the schedule makers sat down this season and said, we're mad at the Lakers, so watch this. Because this has been, and we said it back in August when the schedule came out, we looked at this thing and went, oh my gosh. Part of it is it's just the Western Conference. If you're in the East, you get some games against some lesser opponents. And, you know, it's right now that with the 9-10 in the East is Atlanta and Chicago and like teams that aren't going to give you as much of a game on any given night. That's part of it. But it's also the number of back-to-backs they've had, the number of times they have been the team that's at a rest deficiency where their opponent is well-rested and they are not. The Lakers are in the second night of a back-to-back. They've been near the bottom of the NBA in the number of back-to-backs, in the number of times they've had a rest disadvantage. It's been rough. It's been rough. And that's why, really, when we look at this Lakers team, and so many people are, oh, they underperformed by a ton. Did they really? Did they? Like, I think the answer is yes, by the way. Let me preface this. I think yes. Have they underperformed? Yes. Okay? Yes. That's the answer. But by as much as we think, because heading into the season, we're like, okay, Lakers should be, you know, top three this year, top five, you know, whatever. But when you factor in how brutal the schedule has been, when you factor in, yes, now LeBron and AD have been healthy. So that's part of it too, right? When you factor in all the injuries that they've had this season, they've been, I believe, the second most games missed due to injury. And that was a few weeks ago that I looked at that stat. So it may have shifted, but they're up there in terms of games missed due to injury. Everybody besides LeBron and AD has been insanely injured for much of the season. When you add in those things, is it and the depth of the Western Conference, is that much of a surprise where they're at? I mean, what are we really talking about right now when we look at where the Lakers are at? We're talking about a long December, right? To go a little Counting Crows on you. It's been a really bad month of December and into January a little bit, post in-season tournament, that made all the difference. They went, what, 3-12 or something like that? You go 6-9, maybe it was 3-11 during that stretch, but you go, you win 7 games out of that stretch, and everything looks completely different right now. So we're talking about really one, and that's how tight the West is right now, one stretch of the season that has put them in the spot in the ninth seed where everybody sees their ninth, even though their win percentage is better than it was last year. People see they're in the ninth seed and they go, oh my gosh, this is a disaster. I don't think it's quite as bad as we're thinking it is. Like, there are a few games, they're one bad stretch away from being a solid, you know, fifth, sixth seed, something like that. And then when you factor in the injuries, when you factor in the mistakes that have been made on the coaching front, certainly you factor in the schedule and how difficult that's been, how many times they've been at a rest disadvantage this season, it all kind of adds up and you see why they're at where they're at. Now, again, all of that, I know there's people that are going to be shouting from the mountaintops, excuses, right? It's all true in terms of context. But again, going back to what I said earlier in the show, adapt and overcome. You know, you got to find a way. That the bottom line is, you got to find a way. You can understand why the Lakers are sitting where they're at, but you can also say, well, as much as they had these hurdles to adjust to adapt to, and to overcome, they did not overcome. They did not adapt. They were not successful in that, at least not in context of a Western Conference that is winning at a higher clip and kind of cannibalizing itself by beating up on itself. So again, all of that, I think, matters when we're looking at this Lakers season, and a lot of people feeling disappointed about it, and you're noting that there's still three more back-to-backs. Yeah, the schedule's been brutal. The injury front has been brutal for the Lakers this season. So,
get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's where it makes sense to me that they're sitting where they are in the standings when you add all of that up. Should they have found ways to be better? Should they have not lost focus for that 3 weeks or whatever in December? Yeah, they definitely shouldn't have. And we'd be singing a very different tune right now. Look. Add three wins and take away three losses. Well, I mean, what are they right now? They're right now knotted with Sacramento and Dallas for the 7-8 seed. They're right there for the 6 seed. If they don't suffer so many injuries this season, where are they at then? The 6, the 5? They're right there. But they were not able to adapt and overcome the things that were put in front of them this season. Some of that's on coaching. Some of that's on the players, of course. All right, Martin said, if we land in the 8 spotting at OKC in the first round, I like our chances for a deep playoff run. If Vando is back, go get a big. Yeah, I talked about the first part already, so I won't rehash, but go get a big. Yes, please. Yes, please. That's got to be one of the keys. You know, as much as we know the Lakers this summer, and we're going to have plenty of time to talk about the summer, but they're going to go star hunting. They're going to try to get Trae Young. They're going to try to get Donovan Mitchell. Maybe they're going to try to get Mikal Bridges or whoever else may or may not be out there. We don't know for sure who's going to be on the market. But good Lord, get a big. Get a true physical. You're going to be hurting when you play against me big. Maybe it doesn't have to be somebody that plays every single night, but the lack of another physical presence in the paint has been very noticeable for the Lakers this season. It's been a problem. And it's only been exacerbated with the absence of Christian Wood, who I think his season is probably over. We know his regular season is over. I would imagine his season is probably over, but we'll see how deep of a playoff run the Lakers can or can't make. But you need, even if Christian Wood was back though, he's more of a finesse guy. You need a true big on this roster. Don't forget what got you here. Don't forget what got you the title in 2020. It's having that big physical roster that the Lakers for some reason have gone away from. Now, there's other aspects to it. It's not just they were bigger and faster and all that kind of stuff. That was certainly part of it, though, having that size, because they did still close games with Anthony Davis at the 5 quite a bit. The perimeter defense has been an issue as well, and that's a different type of player than these bigs. But not having a Dwight, a JaVale, a Marc Gasol, right? Any of these guys to put into the middle, it's been a problem for the Lakers this season. Ree said, much needed win. Hope Houston knocks Golden State out in the play-in or out of the play-in. Again, the NBA, oh my gosh, that's the stuff of nightmares. From the Lakers' perspective, I wouldn't hate it if Golden State didn't even make the play-in. M-Dread, although, you know what, as a basketball fan, to not get a LeBron versus Curry win or go home matchup, that hurts a little bit. M-Dread, Dorian, Buddy, and Brown are all duds, and we wanted them. Oh, guys that we wanted the Lakers to trade for at the trade deadline, you mean? Gotcha. I mean, Buddy Hield didn't look great for the 76ers against the Lakers. You've been missing a bunch of shots. I still have a lot of people saying the Lakers should have done Miles Turner and Buddy Hield for Russell Westbrook to start the season, plus two firsts, rather than the deals. And we'll see. If the Lakers are able to swing a great deal using their first this summer, well, that's a first they saved by not doing the Miles Turner deal, by instead waiting and doing the D'Angelo Russell deal. And D'Lo just set the record for all-time three-pointers made in a Lakers season. So, I don't know. I mean, I feel like the Lakers have kind of been vindicated, even though Malik Beasley is now shooting great for the Bucks, and he was part of that trade package, and they weren't able to hang on to him, and now Jared Vanderbilt's been hurt. But D'Angelo Russell's been fantastic, so I can't complain. Hope they don't play this way against the Pacers. Yes, if the Lakers play the way they did against the 76ers on the offensive end against the Pacers, they're going to lose if they do that tonight. Now, they've been not good, great offensively since the All-Star break. So my guess would be that they will not play that poorly again offensively. That was just a blip, and I'm expecting a much better offensive performance tonight out of the Lakers. All right, everybody, as usual, I sat down to start this show thinking, okay, I'm going to do a quick preview of Lakers Pacers. We're going to talk a little bit about Spencer Dinwiddie. We'll get into the mailbag. Quick show, boom, in and out. Here we are, 47 minutes and counting later. This is what happens. This is why I do what I do. Because once you get me going on Lakers basketball, I love this stuff too much. Even in a season that has hurt us so many times, I love this stuff way too much. And I just wind up having too many things that I want to talk about regarding this team and their future and what's happening right now and all of that. My goodness. But thank you, everybody, for joining me here on a Sunday. I appreciate all of you. Hope you do come join us tonight during the game. We'll be live over on Playback, playback.tv/LakersNation. Come hang out with us. And then you can also hang out for our play-by-play on the Lakers Nation YouTube channel, youtube.com/LakersNation. Let's get this win. Let's get it against the Pacers tonight. Till then, everybody, see ya and stay safe.